Hello, this is Daniel Chalkin.
And this is Matt and Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, fired up to make software. Well, Manton, it is the season of rejection once again. And I wish you and your family a very happy rejection. And I hope that all of your App Store submissions are merry and invalid.
Invalid binary.
It's time again. The crew at Apple have fired up the old iTunes Connect, and your long wait through the week of no rejections is over. Are you excited? Are you gathered around the App Store tree, excited to see what waits for you?
I'm not excited because my app is still waiting for review, the one I mentioned before. It's now been 2 weeks, give or take a day. And, of course, a lot of that was the holiday shutdown. But I think if you subtract that, it's still been – I mean, I think the holiday shutdown is about a week. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess this is about a week plus a little bit on either side, you know, total. But I'm not happy because the app is still not approved. And, of course, it has a couple crashing bugs that people see. I mean, I look at my stats and, you know, Crashlytics and everything for it. And it's like people are hitting these bugs that have been fixed for weeks. It's very frustrating. Of course, the moment Apple approves it, I guess all will be forgiven. That's usually how it is. But until that happens, no, not happy. Not happy at all.
And there's always the chance, of course, that there will be some subtle thing that they finally noticed that they decide is grounds for outright rejection.
Yeah. And luckily, like, the one thing they do a fairly good job with is when they reject, they are pretty quick with the follow-up. But that's the only good thing I can say about the rejection process.
Yeah, they definitely seem to prioritize things that they have rejected.
Right. Which, again, gets back to, they could do this fast if they want to. I remain convinced.
Right, you still have your conspiracy theory that they're...
And they're doing nothing to disprove them. But it's the end of the year. It's I was about to say Christmas Eve, but it's New Year's Eve as we record this, and the App Store has been open for a few days, and some things are starting to move, like you said.
Yeah, well, it was interesting timing for Twitter's 4.0 update because it was released yesterday, I think, the 30th. Does that sound right? I think so.
That's right.
And so that means it was either approved before the App Store shut down, or it was like just waiting right there at the front of the line to be approved as soon as they started, you know, started a business again.
Or Apple pulled some strings.
Or they have some super, yeah, super parallel process where Tim Cook personally approved it. And who knows? But needless to say, Manton, they were in some kind of advantaged position compared to yours because you are still waiting.
Yep. And they also have a little bit of advantage, I guess, in that they are not impatient to release that app. You know, it's been a while since the last version. It's not something they would rush out because, I mean, I assume, you know, that if there was something emergency bug fix like the ones I'm hitting, you know, they would have shipped them as part of the old version or whatnot. I feel like this was probably approved a little while back. If not approved, at least it was, they felt like it was in good shape a while back.
Yeah. Well, which is funny because I haven't seen an App Store app release or any app release really for the Mac in a long time that has received as much scrutiny as this app has. And I think that speaks to how much time has passed since the last major update for Twitter's Mac app. Also to the fact that I think a lot of people have invested interest in sort of like use the Mac app as a thermometer of Twitter's interest in native clients in general.
Mm-hmm.
This app comes out, Twitter 4.0, and the first things I see about it are like, hooray, you know, drop the confetti, start the marching band, let's have a parade, there's a Twitter 4.0. And that lasted for about 10 minutes, and then it was like the negativity set in. And it's funny because I actually had a modest negative experience with the app because I launched it up and I hadn't used Twitter's native app for probably years. I have been mostly using Tweetbot lately, and before that I used Twitterific. You know, I popped it up and it had all my accounts still in it. It had my Mars Edit, my Red Sweater, my Black Ink accounts, and it had, of course, my main account. Daniel Punk ass, but it wasn't showing up. And I was like, what? This is weird. Like, the alignment's weird of this, like, UI. What it turned out was happening was there was a blank spot where my Daniel Punk ass account was. I had been erased from Twitter. they confused me with you for a moment.
And meanwhile, I launch it and everything's perfect.
Yeah, they're trying to get you back. That's why. And then I had to end up, you know, I tried tweeting from my blank account and said, this is a private account. And I'm like, what? What does that even have to do with anything? Like, I'm not a private account. And even if it were, I should be able to tweet from it. I tweeted a screenshot of this. Actually, in all honesty, I mean, I'm totally sincere here. I did it in the hope that somebody who follows me, you know, worked on it and cares about the app and would want to know about this, and they could follow up with me.
Bug report and versus...
Yeah, bug report style. It's these big companies. Of course, you sort of, I tend to think I'll have a better time. I mean, Apple is actually an exception in the sense that they have a really well-defined bug reporting process. But other companies, like, I don't know, email support, it seems like I have a better chance sometimes just talking to my nerds, right? And so I did that just thinking like, oh, this is a weird freak edge case that I ran into. And I say all that with all those qualifications just to say I wasn't trying to pile on, which is what people quickly started accusing lots of others of doing, because I guess it kind of became a pretty ferocious criticism of the app. Mm-hmm. People running into issues, I think, other than mine. People upset that long-awaited feature updates weren't there, in particular, like, you know, things that Twitter supports, like the new polling feature that's not supported in this native app. Things like, what's the whole news thing they have now?
Moments.
Moments, yeah. Moments is not supported in the app. And then the OS integration stuff like split screen support for El Capitan, mm-hmm, is not there. It's sort of a lesson in how, I mean, it kind of freaks me out, because as the developer of Mars Edit, an app that has a lot of people waiting patiently for lots of different things, it's sort of a guarantee that whatever my next major update does is not going to be enough,
right,
for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think there's a couple things we can learn from this. One is just to acknowledge the kind of the bad parts of piling on and the mob. And like, once it becomes safe to criticize an app as being like terrible, like everybody does it, even though it's not really true. Yeah. Like I said, this app, to me, if I had ignored everything, I think this app was just fine. It didn't crash. It didn't have any glitches. Seemed reasonably fast. I don't think this app is bad. But when people start, you know, and Twitter just amplifies this, when people start criticizing it and pointing out bugs, yeah, the narrative becomes this app is no good. And then everyone feels safe to criticize it, which is just not fair. And it's just a real exaggeration of how the app actually is. But yeah, the other part is thinking about our own apps and the expectations that people have. And I think that's a lot of what's happening here, right? It's like, you were using Tweetbot, so of course that's the standard you hold this to.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, that's not exactly true, because I mean, Tweetbot doesn't have polls. Tweetbot doesn't have moments.
No. Yeah. They can't have those things, right. I think. And actually, you know, one of the reasons I eagerly downloaded and launched the app is because the fact is, as an avid Twitter user, I have been drawn more to the native stuff, or to the, not the native, but the first, mm-hmm, what is it? First person, first class. I don't know.
First party.
Yeah. You got it. And it's precisely because there's these new features. You know, it's a different world now than it was when, third party apps could implement everything Twitter's own stuff implemented and more.
Right.
We're now at a place where it's like, if you want to reliably, you know, see polls, if you want to do the thing where you quote a tweet, you know, you might not, I don't even know if you're familiar with this at this point.
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
With it.
Okay. You know, I often find myself like, I don't think Tweetbot supports that. So I often find myself like, well, this tweet I want to quote officially. So I copy the link to it and go into the browser and do it. On the iOS, I've sort of ended up switching over to using Twitter's native client. It's like I'm definitely being pulled that way. So in that sense, whatever Twitter's doing is working. Hmm. But yeah, this
and by whatever's Twitter's doing, you mean killing off the third party ecosystem?
Yeah, right. It's working.
It's working.
Well, I guess to me, like both in a good way and in a bad way, in that sense, this Twitter 4.0 is more tweety than Twitter still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, I'm nostalgic for that. It's funny. I still have, you know, I don't know what it was, some user default I set years ago. Maybe this, to be fair, maybe this is partly responsible for my quote unquote buggy behavior, but I have like,
Comes out now.
I have like the developer. I don't know if this is on by default, the developer preference tab. If you go to preferences, do you see a developer tab?
In the Twitter app?
Yeah.
Let's see.
It's kind of like this weird thing that survived since Tweety.
Yeah, I still have it, and I don't.
Yeah,
show developer menu.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in there by default, but it might be because it's this weird thing that survived since Lauren was in charge of it. And then there's another tab that you probably don't have unless you enabled it, which is called Secret.
Yep, don't have that one.
And Secret has all this cool stuff like, oh, here's one. There's an option you can turn on: type anywhere to start a new tweet. That doesn't work. I just turned it on. So this is like probably cruft that shouldn't be in there anymore. But it's something where it shows the lineage of the app. So like, you know, one of the things that came out, actually, The Verge had an article revealing at least their allegation that this app was not developed, or at least this version of the app was not developed in-house, that it was outsourced to Black Pixel, which is, of course, a company many of us know, and they do lots of great things, develop lots of great apps in-house for their own stuff, and they have had a lot of high-profile clients. So this is an example, though, where clearly whatever they did on the app, it's not a brand new app. Like when I read that, it said this was actually developed by Black Pixel. Like, I went in and I said, no. This was developed by Lauren Brichter because I still have my Secret tab, and you know, a lot of this stuff still looks, you know, vaguely Tweety like.
Yeah, they were tasked with updating it, of course, but we don't know, was that a month project, was that 9 month project,
right?
And we don't know how much control they had, because I mean, that's the other part of this with consulting is, I mean, you want to do your best work. I'm sure Black Pixel set out to like, wow, what a great opportunity we have to do the Twitter app, let's do the best work we possibly can. But they ultimately don't have say on maybe the QA process or when it ships or bug fix updates, for example. Like, I'm sure they want to get on top of these bugs, even if they're minor little things, and get an update out, but that's not up to them. It's not their name on the app. And I find this just even my small little consulting projects, trying to have that balance of, yes, I want to do good work, you know, ship quality code and a good app, but let's say I'm not the designer.
Yeah.
And the designer gives me Photoshop mockups that I'm not a fan of. Well, I can't go out of my way. I mean, I'll try to improve it as much as I can, but I can't do like 5 times the amount of work that I budgeted, because then I'm just throwing money away. I mean, not making the money that I expected on the project. So with consulting, it's a lot different than, like, for example, if Black Pixel had acquired the Twitter app and they owned it.
Yeah, well, that would be a different story. Exactly. So it's funny you say that, because in the midst of all the quote-unquote piling on, I actually made a tweet that I'm looking at right now, and it's one of those tweets where I sort of think I thought after I wrote it, I should probably delete this, and then I let it stay, and now I think I should probably delete it.
Oh, no.
But it has an element of something that I like, and it has an element of something I don't like, and it's brevity mainly. So it's brevity, I think, and the context of when I wrote it reads as piling on the developers of the Twitter 4.0 app, which we now know are Black Pixel. We are led to believe that by this Verge article. And it says, my tweet says, Twitter 4.0 for Mac is a job done well. And then it says, you can't buy passion or pride of ownership. Jobs done great are an exceedingly rare breed. And the point of that tweet, to my mind, was, hey, come on, this is what happens when you pay somebody to make your app. And I guess that's not going to come across very well to people who do consulting for a living, and I'm sure are proud of their work and put a lot of their own pride and passion into the work, but I don't think anybody who does the work for pay can have the same pride of ownership that you or I have when we're working on it, on our stuff, or even the kind of pride of ownership you have when you're working at a big company and working on the app for your employer. It's a different thing, I think. And maybe, maybe I'm selling, you know, consulting shops a little bit short by making that assumption, but I have to imagine a lot of people who work in consulting shops would agree that you don't get the same kind of fired up feeling working on stuff that is here today, gone tomorrow, and stuff which you may not even be empowered to put all your pride into.
Yeah. And it's possible. I mean, even with this, you know, I said you don't want to put so much work and pride into it that you don't make money. It's not a profitable business for that particular project. I mean, for all we know, BlackPixel didn't even make money on it. I mean, they obviously charge Twitter. Twitter has plenty of money in the bank for this kind of thing. But it's possible they put even more time than they were expecting because they felt like the return on that investment would be worth it and be able to tell potential clients, yeah, we made the Twitter app, you know, like it's a calling card kind of thing. So I expect they put a lot of work into this and a lot of time, but still there's so many things we don't know. It's so easy for bugs to slip through. And like I said, it works for me. I mean, some of the problems that I've seen so far, they could be things that could be addressed in 4.0.1 and it wouldn't be the end of the world. But we don't know how the process went. We don't know if there's any weird struggle and politics involved with working with Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know if Twitter engineers were involved. I mean, last time I checked, I thought Twitter had like 100 like Cocoa developers internally. So, I mean, who knows? Some of them might have been involved too. I mean, it might have been a very strange process to work in.
Or was everybody at Twitter just like, not it?
Right. Yeah. And of course, it's an older project, or it started as started life a while ago. And so it may be that there's a lot of time just updating it, right? Just getting it to build on the latest version of Xcode.
Well, I know for at least a while, maybe even over a span of years, I think there were multiple people working on the Twitter for Mac app, but I have a memory that Ben Sandofsky was the main person involved with it for a long time, and he no longer works at Twitter. So,
and he's been gone for
at least a couple years, I think. Yeah. So it does seem plausible that there's sort of a vacuum of people who have that same pride of ownership within Twitter, and then it's like, well, it would be nice if they actually want to support this thing. It would be nice to identify and hire somebody who is fired up to be in charge of it, you know?
Right. But right now they don't need to do that. Right now, I think if I was Twitter, I would write BlackPixel another check and say, please work on updates for this for the next 3 to 6 months. Let's work out the bugs and let's make users happy. And then we'll figure out what we want to do internally. Because the worst thing they could do right now, I think, would be to cut BlackPixel off and say, yeah, we're going to take it in-house. Then 4.0.1, I mean, it'd be forever before that thing ships. So that would be my 2 cents, too.
I wonder, too, another thing I'm sort of curious about, is there like a certain size of company you get to be where you just no longer consider hiring individual consultants? Like you just go to the big consulting shop? Because, again, not trying to besmirch BlackPixel at all. It just seems like this is the kind of task. I mean, this app started as a one-person app, and then it became, I think, inside Twitter, sort of largely a one-person app to maintain. Maybe it's kind of a one-person app. Maybe like it would have been a reasonable thing to identify a passionate, fired-up individual to sort of take it on. I don't know.
This is good. I think we should explore this because it gets to why I quit my job, which is big companies versus small companies. Twitter is so big, they could not possibly outsource this to one person because that person would have no time for coding. They'd be in meetings all the time. they'd be a project manager, and then they'd have to outsource to a friend to actually do the coding. I mean, a company the size of Twitter would have to work with a company, I would say, at least 20 people or bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Black Pixel is bigger than that, but I think that would be kind of the minimum size of company, maybe 10 to 20 at a minimum. And even a smaller company like that, which is obviously much bigger than a one-man shop, but like that, even that size of company would have to dedicate a lot of resources, I think. Because, yeah, you're going to be in meetings with Twitter all the time.
Yep.
You know, there's going to be all sorts of just bureaucracy and kind of silly stuff that you have to deal with. The only reason one person could do a project like this is if they had total control to just run with it and do great work with it and make some calls by themselves. That's the only way it could work. And that's the way it did work.
Yeah.
The very original version.
Oh, you're getting me all fired up to make software again.
Good.
That's how it works, Manton. We get excited and we do it on our own. We don't have meetings. That's the recruiting pitch for indie software.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, this week we're happy to have a brand new sponsor sponsoring the podcast to promote Carbon Copy Cloner. Don't let a hard drive failure ruin your week. Get back to work in minutes with a Carbon Copy Cloner bootable backup. Carbon Copy Cloner protects your data with scheduled backups, smart updates, task chaining, recovery hard drive backup, and the Carbon Copy Cloner safety net to protect against accidental deletion and file corruption. Carbon Copy Cloner can back up to local volumes, network volumes, or disk images. Check out Carbon Copy Cloner 4's free 30-day trial, and if you love it, our license covers all the personal computers in your household. Carbon Copy Cloner, the app that's been saving your bacon since 2002.
Wow, Manton, that 2002 rings true to me because I have been hearing about Carbon Copy Cloner and Bombich Software, the makers of this great app, probably since about then. And in fact, it's kind of a personal connection for me because I remember when I first learned about them was my dad actually had tried one of their products. I don't remember if it was this or something else. And he was moved to email me to say, basically, hey, have you heard about this guy? Do you know this guy, Mike Bombich? He makes this great software. And it was like, I took a look at it back then. I agreed with my dad then. Over the years, I have used Carbon Copy Cloner. It's a great app. It really does save your bacon. If you want to make regular backups of a whole disk or even just folders on your Mac, one of the things Carbon Copy Cloner pays a lot of attention to is really making sure that the copied disk will behave the way you expect it. Like it can handle things like recovery partitions being preserved. And they have this great interface. The UI for this is unusual in its great design. You know, a lot of these kind of technical type backup software packages, especially this, you know, the ones that copy you up to the web, they sometimes they don't look like native Mac apps to me. Carbon Copy Cloner is a totally native looking Mac app, and it's beautiful. It has a great design, and it has this idea of tasks that you can set up to run. And they even have, cool extra features that sort of mimic like, the idea of having, you know, a history of your files. They have something called a safety net, which you can leave on. And if you have that on, it actually stores older copies of all your files in a separate folder on the destination backup drive. So you can dig in and get older stuff if you accidentally, forget and have some old change of something you wished you still had. So great app. I'm sure there's lots more to talk about with Carbon Copy Cloner. I really recommend you download it for yourself and give it a try. They have a generous trial period, 30-day trial. You can just download it, start using it, get used to it, see how it works for you. And then when you decide to pay for it, it's only $40. So give it a try, carboncopycloner.com/coreint. Thanks very much to Carbon Copy Cloner for sponsoring Core Intuition.
Okay, Daniel, well, as we said, the year is wrapping up. As we record, there are not too many hours left in 2015. And so we want to take a moment just to kind of reflect on, gosh, have we gotten anything done this year? And what are we trying to finish up this year? What haven't we finished up? I know I had a lot of goals for 2015 since I quit my job. I had expected to ship a brand new major product. Haven't done it. It will not ship today either.
How's your Kickstarter going?
It is not launched. I defined it in Kickstarter, but of course it's waiting on, you know, the video and having all the right words in there. And I still plan to do that next month.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a big goal for January. I've been spending a lot of time, so I haven't been working a whole lot over the holidays, but I've been trying to squeeze in, you know, really trying a few hours a day to try to get some work done. And part of that is some consulting stuff, like keeping up with client projects so that everybody's happy. And part of that is just trying to look at this big project that I've been working on for microblogging. And like, I mean, I have a list, you know, I have a bug list, I've got OmniFocus, like trying to find some small things that I can just hit off quick.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been doing a fairly good job with that, but there's just still so much to do. I really want to ship a fully realized product, something that has everything. And of course, this is a trap, like trying to feature creep and just trying to include everything. But, and that's not exactly what I mean, but I want it to have out of the box, have like everything that people, that I feel like people need for this kind of product. Like I want the experience at the very beginning to be as positive as possible and have just a lot of value. So people don't have to wait 2 months for rolling out the other things that I kind of had in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always difficult to make that call. Like I'm impressed when I see people who manage to ship something that I can easily see, well, that they probably should have waited. I'll say to myself, you probably should have waited, but then I watch as they succeed because they're, you know, actually doing it right.
Yeah, it's there's so much, I don't know, there's so many things I could leave out, so many things I could include. There's a part of what I'm doing that's hosting, and there's a lot of ways to host a website, for example, on the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to compete with all of them. Like what I'm doing is in a lot of ways a lot simpler. But there are things that as I've kind of do research and just think about this, there are things that people kind of expect. Let's say you're going to host your blog somewhere. If you go to WordPress.com and you sign up, you will be surprised, and not in a good way, if, for example, you can't change the design of it at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And like they could have shipped without that. They could have shipped with one default theme,
mm-hmm.
but I think Medium. It wouldn't be very successful. Right.
Yeah. Well, just except for Medium comes to mind, and they're
yeah. Well,
pretty
exactly.
Successful.
Well, yeah, but is that really a blogging platform? I mean, I guess it kind of is.
That's a big question there.
But like I don't know. Maybe that's something to think about. You're right. But I would say that's for people who want to control their site and actually kind of own their content and have their own domain name. And like not being able to customize the design at all is a big problem. Medium maybe makes up for that because they have such a nice kind of rich editor and you can include graphics and big text, and they compensate a little bit because they have that. But a traditional like blogging platform needs something more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason in Mars Edit you have, for example, you know, like templates and, you know, being able to preview your site in different ways and stuff. And people want that kind of flexibility.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's funny to look at something like Mars Edit. I've said earlier in the show, and I've said before that there's no way I can, whatever I ship, somebody's going to be disappointed. And yet, this is a good example of where the psychology of a product is totally different depending on the app and what you expect from it, because somebody else can come out with a My Blogger thing 1.0 that has a tenth of the features of Mars Edit, but nobody expects it to have everything yet, right?
Yeah.
So then it might even do well. And some apps have done well, and rightfully so, because they are sort of starting fresh with their own base of users who actually, well, the base of users that you attract with the 1.0 will be specifically that set of users that is satisfied enough by whatever you do have in the 1.0. And so in a way, that's kind of refreshing because you're not going to disappoint anybody, really. I mean, there may be people who say, darn it, that was close to something I wanted, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted. But they're not disappointed the same way somebody is when they're like, I've been using this for 5 years and you didn't meet my needs.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly expectations involved in that. And we saw that with the Twitter app. There's also like kind of acknowledging who you're competing with, I think. For example, if you're competing sort of with WordPress and you don't match some of that functionality, you know, you kind of have a problem.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, part of it is just figuring out what those things that they're actually core features that have to be there to be competitive.
So how are you going to figure that out, Manson?
I have no idea. Just do everything until I get so burned out that I have to ship. Yeah, I mean, the part of so like what I've been working on this week is the themes and the templates and that kind of stuff. That's why I brought it up with WordPress. And I feel like that's really important because part of what I want people to think about in terms of owning their own content and having their own microblog is doing things and having control over things that you can't get with like Twitter or something else, right? And I mean, you can update your profile picture on Twitter and the background image and stuff, but I mean, really you have no control over it. It's a centralized thing. You can't have your own domain name, can't have your own design. That's just how Twitter works. It's a social network. Mm-hmm. So being able to do things that are kind of the opposite of that, like giving people more functionality, I feel like is important. So like, for example, if you have your own microblog on your own site, which I do, having control over the design of it. I'm not complete control maybe, but at least having some control and having some flexibility in how you manage that.
It's interesting because it's sort of an attitude that leads you away from simplicity in a sense. You're sort of like targeting this flexibility that is an antidote in your mind to the lack of control that you have on other microblogging services, but you have to then try to figure out like, how do I do that without abandoning simplicity? Well, I mean, that's a big if, I guess, whether you care to maintain simplicity. And arguments can be made either way, but I tend to think, you know, the simplest solution that actually empowers people to do what they want is the best solution.
Yep.
But it's kind of funny. I had this thought while you were talking about, you know, everything you're comparing to Twitter, you have a kind of touchstone for development, and it's what wouldn't Twitter do?
Right.
You know, people always joke like, what would Panic do as a way to like inspire, like making the right choices? What wouldn't Twitter do?
Yeah, I think I could be well served by that.
You know, should you have an API? Well, what wouldn't Twitter do?
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm inspired a lot by what Twitter built, but not like what they do today, I guess. Like, I think there's a lot to learn from the timeline experience. I think there's a lot to learn from making it super, super easy to post. Like, that's something that Twitter and Facebook completely got right. And people, you know, we're lazy, everybody. Like, we don't want to spend a lot of time sometimes crafting the perfect title and writing an essay. We want something simple that we can just fire off the short thing. So like that's something I can learn from how Twitter kind of started that, not trend, but like that started that kind of way of writing on the internet. Want to learn from that. Want to learn from timelines. Want to learn from following behavior and that kind of stuff. But yeah, everything else I want to do differently because I think that's where Twitter really showed what they built, you know, what they wanted to build, which is an ad-supported, closed, you know, centralized network, and I don't want to do anything like that, right?
Well, so what are we going to see? I mean, here's the thing. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Do New Year's resolutions work for you, Manton? They don't work for me, so I'm asking you. Do they work? And if so, let's make some.
Yeah, I guess I don't usually make New Year's resolutions about software.
Yeah.
They're usually more, you know, the more classic, you know, personal, I'm going to run every day or I'm going to, you know, write in my journal or, you know, there's more personal stuff. So I don't think I usually make them about software and business. I probably should.
I don't know. I don't know if you should. I'm sort of against New Year's resolutions. Yeah. So we make a good balance here. We make a good pair.
I like setting goals because if I don't set goals and schedules, like I'll never get anything done. I mean, that's the only way I can finish something is if I have some kind of deadline, whether it's self-imposed or not. So, I mean, I like that. And I mean, I said a minute ago, you asked about Kickstarter. I said, January, I'm going to do that. I mean, so that's in a way, that's kind of a resolution. Like I'd like to get that done and put it out there in January.
Here's my problem with New Year's resolutions. Well, I have a lot of problems with them, but... let's say, what is the point? You're going to get it done within the year. That's one way of looking at it. And then you got a whole year to like slack off. Or are you going to get it done in January? I mean, sometimes it seems like what people want when they make a New Year's resolution is they want an instant change to their life, like the running thing or the exercise, not eating so much, whatever, read more books. And then it's like, okay, well, when is that? Is that instant? No, nothing's ever instant. Can't just flip a switch. You can't just be a different person overnight. So making the goal on December 31st to be a different person on January 1st, I think mostly fails for people. Is it good to have goals? Yes. So like, when should you be making goals? Probably more regularly than just once a year, right? Mm-hmm. So I always think like, okay, great. Well, New Year's resolution. I want to read one book by Ernest Hemingway. Oh, I achieved that in January. Now I'm off the hook until December. You know, I don't know. It just feels like it's a great. It is. I don't want to dissuade anybody from reflecting on what their ambitions are and what their goals are. I've often kind of made snarky comments about this around New Year's on Twitter. Things like, you should make resolutions every day. Like, you know, maybe not literally every day, but yeah, goals are good. But God, if you think about the people who are really successful and you really admire what they've done with their lives and all the work that they do or all the helping other people that they do, whatever it is that they do, do you think they only plan it on December 31st?
Well, the thing about New Year's resolutions is when we acknowledge, it's the same thing as when I said, like, there's stuff I want to get done before the end of the year. There's this, New Year's is this acknowledgement of like time passing. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're getting older and there are things you want to do in your life. And I think that's, to me, that's what a resolution is about. It's like, how can I be a better person and how can I accomplish more things next year? Because I'm not getting any younger. And so I like it as that. I like having some kind of measure. Because, I mean, you know, you blink and, like, you know, your kids are grown up and, like, you're, you know, it's, yep, like, you, all this time has passed. And so I like that. I like thinking about, I don't know, actually accomplishing things before the end of the year, or it's a new year, it's a new start, you know, or it's a new day, it's Monday, ready, it's a new week, I can get some stuff done. So I don't know. I agree with your kind of, a little bit of pessimism about like how you can get wrapped up in that and set goals that don't really matter. But I like it as a way to just acknowledge,
yeah,
you know, time is passing and yes, better hurry up and get some stuff done.
Yeah, as usual, I'm such the old crank, the black and white, no in the middle. I think it's funny. It totally lines up with my personality to be like, New Year's resolutions, not going to do them. Not going to touch that stuff. Nope.
Punk ass.
And I used to make elaborate New Year's resolutions. And I guess it's that inability to find a compromise in the middle that keeps me so strident about it. Because I used to have like, okay, New Year's resolution. My New Year's resolutions weren't like, I want to jog more or I want to read more. They were like, read at least one book a month, you know, and then it was like 20 more resolutions like that. Lose 1 pound per month, mm-hmm, whatever, you know, and it's like this long list of things. I was like, oh my God, how am I ever going to do all this stuff? And I guess that sort of put me in the mood of, I don't know, for my personality, at least what I've recognized is, I'm very goal oriented. We've talked about this with respect to like my OmniFocus stuff and putting things in there, ambitions on a regular basis is good for me. But a lot of other goals in life, I mean, just like I have to just like chip away at it all the time. I can't have it. Doesn't, for whatever reason, it doesn't serve me to have like that. Like I was saying that, well, December 31st is over. Tomorrow I become a new person. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, that's what a lot of New Year's resolutions are saying. I think it's that, it is that ambition to be a different person, which, yeah, is laudable. But if you can't make that resolution on November 31st, then it's probably not going to be feasible on December 31st either.
Yeah, there's something about a new year, I think, that's like a fresh start. I think it, you know, it gives people, it's like a blank slate. It's like, well, I haven't made any mistakes this year yet.
Yeah.
It's January 1st.
That's a... Yeah, if that mental model works, then run with it, I would say, you know, and I'm sure to some extent I'm acting like I don't have any, I'm not vulnerable to that at all, but of course I am. I see it as a clean slate as well.
Well, there's also, I think maybe a, I mean, obviously there's a lot of different types of resolutions you can make. I mean, you mentioned some, you had like 20 goals, but they're all kind of small and specific, like read a book a month.
Yeah.
But then there's also the broader kind of. Like, I, for example, I could make a resolution, just one, and it would be like, stay in business in 2016, right? It's like, keep doing what I'm doing and make sure I can support my family. I mean, that's very high level. There's like, there's no specific small thing involved in that or said in that, but there's lots of little things that I would have to do to make that goal. But I don't know, is that a good or is that way too broad of a resolution?
Here's what I'm inspired to maybe do and to maybe backtrack on my promise not to make resolutions. Here's what I'm inspired to maybe do by what you just said, which is make a list of resolutions that are sort of broad like that, that are touchstone. Like you don't, they're not a specific thing, but they're like your guiding values, right? Mm-hmm. Mine might say things like, spend some time on stuff that's not computers. Spend more time with your family. Ship more apps. And maybe a way to sort of get away from my problem that it's a New Year's specific thing. Maybe make this list of like guiding priorities and print it out and put it up on the wall above your computer.
Yeah.
And then it's actually not going to be a New Year's resolution. It's going to be like an ongoing resolution.
Right. I mean, I like that. It's not stuff you can check off exactly, right, but it's stuff that you always be thinking about and it'll be guiding how you work on and what you work on.
Right. Kind of like the, what wouldn't Twitter do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's good. We need these sort of like, especially as indie developers who don't have bosses telling us what to do. We need these internal checks that help us make prioritization decisions and just decisions about whether we do something or not. You know, like some of it's easy. Like, should I start making my living from sending spam to people?
Right.
You know, I don't have any problem making that call because it's a clear ethical value violation to me. But other things aren't so black and white. And it's like, you know, should I do in-app purchases? I don't know. That's trickier. It would help if I had some good touchstone values to reflect upon, to make that decision. And you know, similarly, should I charge for an update or should it be free? Should I ship this product with minimal features or wait until it has more features? These are the kinds of questions you have to make that would be helpful to have some kind of guiding principles. If they're not already burned into your psyche so deeply that the question is easily answered, then maybe try to like work through what some of those principles are. Mm-hmm. So you have a sort of code to reference, right? Like, so the way anything complicated gets run, like the city, for instance, or the state or the country, there's no one person who can say like, this is how we treat this situation. They have to reference like the code of how things are supposed to be done. I'm on a rant here. I'm on a tangent, but
no, I like it though. It's like, and I think having a mission statement for your company. I mean, I kind of hit on part of that like before I was doing this full time. But when I was thinking about like what products do I keep and what products do I not work on or what worked on it. You know, what projects do I not start? Like having a mission statement that says like, this is the kind of things that I want to work on. And these are the things I want to be known for. I think that really helps making decisions. Everything you work on, you can just say, does it fit in this? And if it doesn't, do I need to do it anyway? I mean, sometimes with consulting, you know, it's like, you know, you can't be too picky. unless you're a bigger company and more well-known, but you should at least be thinking, okay, I'm going to compromise on this a little bit, but I know this isn't exactly what I'm supposed to be working on.
It's kind of like we have to evolve as developers away from, I mean, it's great to have those kind of key phrases like what would Panic do? And that's great when you're getting started, but eventually it has to be what would Manton Reese do?
Exactly. Yeah.
And because the fact is each one of us as individuals behaves and has different priorities than every other one. The most similar developer in the world to you with the same, you would guess, the same principles, the same ideals, the same motivations is still going to do something slightly different than you. So just being more, I'm reminded of Bob Dole when he was running for president. He used to always say, like, Bob Dole doesn't believe in taxes, you know? So it's like, he's kind of like referencing his own code, right? And he's like, they ask him in the debate, like, well, what do you think? Should we put some new taxes? Well, let me check. Oh, nope. Bob Dole doesn't believe in taxes. Yeah. So Manton Reese is saying, well, should I stall for a long time and not ship this thing until it has tons of features? Nope. Manton Reese doesn't believe in that. You know?
I like that. And I also like, I think maybe like the Manton Reese part is like the mission statement, and like the big picture, like what should I work on? What things do I value? But I can still have what would Panic do for, like, what would Panic do about this, the quality of this UI? What would Panic do about, you know, notifying customers? And mm-hmm. I mean, there's the smaller things that I can say, what would Panic do about these? But I'm the one that's in charge of the actual things I'm working on and like the bigger picture stuff. Like, for example, I wouldn't build a Usenet client.
Right.
Right. Panic did. Like, that's, but I can say, like, you know, the quality of what they did or the way they went about it. Like, that's the stuff I want to copy.
Well, you use the questions, what would so-and-so do, to explore the uncertainty you have about what you would do. So, like, when you say, what would Manton do, and there's no answer, then you go searching for what would Panic do.
Yeah, right.
And Bob Dole says, what would Bob Dole do? And then there's a blank spot. So he goes, well, what would Reagan do?
Right. Yeah. And then what would the Republican Party
what
do?
Would,
and
yeah. Then, what would,
yeah.
What would the founding fathers do? Anyway, we can go on for hours on if we let this go into politics. This is the folks listening, if you're not familiar with our show, this is the underlying tension of our show, is that actually Manton and I just want to talk about politics.
But every time we get near that, we know for the sake of our listeners on our podcast, we should probably just wrap it up at that point.
Yeah, well, if you want to make a New Year's resolution, in years past, we have considered the possibility of a politics podcast. And we could make one.
And we probably consider that every 4 years. So we're coming up on, it's an election year.
It is. Uh-oh. Watch out, folks.
Well, it's great talking to you this week. It's been a really fun year for the podcast. I'm really excited about 2016 because we still, I mean, for a while, like, I mean, this podcast has been around how many years? How long have we been doing this?
A million?
6 years, 7 years? I don't know.
At least seven. It's the same age as my son.
There we go. Okay, so I mean, at the beginning, we weren't sure how long we'd be doing this, and now we can definitely say, yeah, we'll be doing this in 2016. In fact, we have, you know, a bunch of sponsors lined up for, gosh, most of the first half of the year. It seems like with a few spots in there still available if anyone wants to sponsor the show, but. It's a big part of what we do. I'm thankful for the podcast and the being able to, you know, just connect with listeners and talk about stuff, whether it's in our Slack or email, and obviously just talk through this stuff on the air. We often do not know what we're going to talk about, and I always come away, you know, Daniel's always telling me something that I should think I should go away and think about. So that's good. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that we're kind of expanding the length a little bit, like we're letting ourselves go a little bit longer. And one of the reasons I wanted to point out that we're doing that is starting in 2016, we're going to have two sponsors for some shows. So we didn't want to have a 30-minute show and have two sponsors in there. So I feel like we have a lot to talk about. So we're going a little bit longer, 45 minutes to an hour usually. And so that's, again, just kind of points to, I think this podcast is in a nice place, and we're really thankful to have all the interest in sponsoring the show. We've had to turn a bunch of people away or like tell them come back in 3 months. And now we can let some more of those in, and that I think that'll be fun to share those new products with our listeners.
Yeah, it's not overstating it to say that sponsors saved the show. Folks who've been listening for a long time remember at our low point, I think we did 2 episodes in 1 year.
Yeah.
We got real bad. We were like, should we do another show? And people were like, when are you going to do another show? And we started getting sponsors, and it was like, oh, we do shows every week. That's it. So it's been fun. It's been obviously a big change in our approach to the show, and we hope you all enjoy it. And if you work at a company or that you think is a perfect fit for the show, obviously try to tune your boss into the idea of sponsoring the show. And you can learn more about that if you want to at coreint.org/sponsorship. So I said Daniel Jalkut doesn't do New Year's resolutions, but it is actually a subtle resolution of mine to push Core Intuition down the road, keep it strong and make it as robust and able to withstand the threat of time. And this sponsorship, solidity of our sponsorship is definitely a big part of that. So we really appreciate all of our sponsors. Today, of course, it was Bomb Bitch Software with their excellent carbon copy cloner. And we look forward to having more great sponsors to help us keep the show going. And Manton, I think I'm going to sign off here. It's my, I have some resolutions to write down and some work to do. You got me fired up about software again. I'm going to go make some auteur software. Is that how you say it?
You're the pronunciation expert. Auteur.
It's when you're an author, but you're a really fancy author who makes a work and not just like a book.
Handcrafted artisan blog software.
Yes. Artisanal. I need to get artisanal, don't I?
Right. Well, it was great talking to you this week. Thanks, everybody, for 2015. It was fun. And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you next year. Ha! Yeah. That joke never gets old.
Bye.